Thank you for joining us and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza. And for those of you that have been listening, sending in questions and comments, thank you so much. And please continue to help spread the word that every Monday from 11 a.m. to noon Pacific time, this show will bring on special guests that can inspire, educate, and in some cases entertain, while bringing answers and options to making our lives happier, healthier, and more successful. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward one of our shows to your social media group and to someone you know who can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way that we, together, can make a positive influence in the world. And speaking of making a positive influence, joining us as my co-host today is one of the founders of Techie for Life, Jason Griglaw. Jason is an experienced mental health clinician who has been helping people for over 20 years. Now, previously, his experience includes working as a juvenile probation officer and in group homes for at-risk youth. Later, he worked as clinical director of a prominent residential treatment center. He is also the co-host of the podcast Autism and Neurodiversity with Jason and Debbie. Jason, thank you for being here. Now, before we get to our guests, can you summarize a little bit about what Techie for Life's mission is?
So Techie for Life is a licensed vocational school that specializes in transitioning neurodivergent young adults out of the home and into a successful independence. And I was excited to be on today's show because of your guests and talking about the technology issues, because a lot of our children, my own personal children, and then also our students we work with, they all struggle with it. And they're all trying to learn how to balance and protect themselves. And so that's what we do. And I'm excited to be here. Thanks for having me, Alan.
All right. I assume everybody can hear me, but I see a message that has come up that says that looks like there's something wrong with my camera. So I'm going to go ahead and do the introduction of our guest, but then I may start fiddling with that. Now, for those that don't receive the email that we send out, which, by the way, if you would like to get an email that explains who's going to ask each week, subscribe, and we will send that to you. We're not going to send you a lot of other stuff. We're not going to sell your information. We're just going to let you know who's going to be on the show and what the topic is. And the topic today is a mom's fight for her daughter in a world of modern technology. Our guest is herself a daughter, a sister, a wife, mother, and now, out of unforeseen and undesired circumstances, an author, Deborah Berry. And she has spent her adult life devoted to her family. Her heart's desire has been to raise her children to be loving, productive, and contributing members of society. Every parent's dream, right? Well, then her world exploded. Her youngest daughter at the age of 10 was lured into a virtual and torrid world of online pornography and sex trafficking. Upon discovery, Deborah entered into the fight of her life. And after years of difficult decisions and tough love, Deborah started her journey to write The Tech Trap. Now, as she continued researching and developing The Tech Trap, her mission evolved to equip parents and educators with knowledge and awareness of those who seek to gain a connection with children through technology. Now, Deborah has focused her energy and her passion gained from the experience of saving her daughter from the dark side of the internet and the aftermath of consequences into The Tech Trap, a book written to provide as much information as possible to other parents so they never have to walk through a similar nightmare as she went through. Deborah, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you for having me today.
Well, so I think for starters, why don't you share a little bit of your story and some of the emotions and things that you went through when you first started to recognize what was going on?
Well, I was doing as most parents do, and I was checking up on my 12-year-old daughter's cell phone, her smartphone, social media, and just doing that routine check that so many of us do. And in the process of that, I was looking at her email and I was looking at her text messages and Snapchat and Instagram. And that particular day, I happened to do something a little different, which was I looked back at her photo library, which was not really something I typically did. And I was just doing it, honestly, for my own amusement. And as I went back in the pictures, I just kept going back further and further until I happened to come across some screenshots that were back in that photo library. All of a sudden, I did not really understand what I was looking at or reading. There were people on those screenshots in conversation with my daughter. I didn't recognize their names. I did not recognize the language that was being used. And in that moment, I realized that my daughter had lost her innocence and I had been robbed of her at the same time. It was an indicator of an iceberg, only the tip of the iceberg. And I knew that there was much more involved in that. To say the least, I was shocked, didn't really know what to do. And so that's how I found what I found that day. That was 2016.
Wow. Jason, can you go ahead for a moment while I work on my camera?
Say lives, they want to give them independence, they want to trust them, you know, that they want to treat them like young adults. And I guess I'd just ask, how do you balance, or how do we balance between, should you be getting on their social media and checking on them, and what if you hadn't?
Very good question. I think that, you know, our current world and the world of technology and social media does not allow for privacy. Period. You just can't. I would like to afford that to my kids. And I tried to afford that to my kids at that time. I actually have two older children as well, who as the cell phones came into use, it was a different world. This child we're talking about is 9 and 7 years younger than the older two. So things had radically changed. And the difference was that all of a sudden you had the internet on your cell phone, or on your smartphone rather, and that changed everything. So you absolutely, to answer the question, cannot afford them that luxury of privacy. It's just too dangerous. And so that's not a smart move.
And I like that we love them too much to give them more burden than they can actually handle. It's not fair to expect a 12-year-old to navigate. It's like a, you know, it's like a fluffy cottontail rabbit in this forest full of wolves and mountain lions. And we're expecting them, out of, you know, their desire to have their privacy. That's not fair to them.
These predators are, you know, on the same social media playgrounds that your children are on. And your children at young ages are absolutely no match for these people. They have very sophisticated systems of how they lure and how they groom your children. And it's not a random creep that happens to connect to your child. It's an entire system that they actually pass them along from one person to the next person. And often your child will think it's the same person, which is a boyfriend or a friend or whatever.
Yeah. And before we get into that, I want to back up. What I loved about your book was that it was a mom writing a book to other moms or parents or loved ones. And I love that it wasn't some research stuffy book. I love that it wasn't talking down to the reader about all the things they should have done different, they should have known. I love that you had to battle with the shoulda, coulda, would'ves. And I want you to go back and tell us, you know, what inspired you to write this book after the fact, when it would have been easier just to, you know, push the whole thing away and move on. Who wants to go back and relive their worst crises?
Well, originally, the book was written as a result of research that I did around technology, because my daughter had been in the wilderness program and then in therapeutic boarding schools for almost 4 years. So that started from age 12 until 16 and a half when she came home. So she had been tech free. And in the therapeutic boarding schools, they had been working obviously on her behaviors and so forth. But I never felt like they had been able to drill down to the impact that the social media and the pornography specifically had had on her. So she was about to come. I realized she was in this like specialized vacuum, so to speak, and she was going to be coming home. And I knew that there was no way that I could control the social media. All she had to do would be to go to school or step out on the street or whatever. And all of a sudden, you know, she might be vulnerable again. So my idea was that I should research and get myself educated and then in turn push that with her therapist so that when she came out, she would at least be educated and she might make bad decisions, but they would be educated decisions. So right. I started that research. And in the process of that research, I was absolutely shocked at what I found. And it was things like, I had a whole section about statistics, how online predators worked, how the law works, how this, how these apps are created, the psychology behind it, all these different things. And so I wanted her to be aware of all these things. And the information was so compelling that it really didn't feel right for me to just keep that to myself. That was more of a, and then I recognized as a mom, through my eyes and my feelings and, you know, from the moment I found this and the feelings I had and the decisions I had to make along the way, which were really tough, tough decisions and painful decisions. So that's the voice in the first part of the book, which is the journey. That's part one of the book.
Well, thank you both for carrying things while I made a camera switch. So it's interesting. We're talking about technology and technology had an influence in this show. So what I'd like to do, I'd like to share one of the questions that have come in. And again, I really want to thank all the people that take their time to send in questions and comments on shows. We get some that come in during the show. We also get some that come in before the show. And it's usually people like teachers that are working during the day and they want to listen to the show later. This particular question is very, very troubling, but it's something that I've dealt with as a detective in the past. And this one reads, a friend's daughter was contacted by a person online who said he was a fashion photographer seeking models for teen magazine ads. He said that he had viewed her Facebook page and thought that she would be a perfect candidate for the job. Only 16, she naively was planning to sneak off and go to meet with him. Thankfully, her mom, who we felt would not approve, overheard her on the phone talking about it. Her mom acted excited and convinced her that she would love to help her with this and went along with her as support. They arrived at the rendezvous point and there were two men. There was a van close by. The men got up and rapidly walked away when they saw an adult with her. I shudder to think how many young women have responded to this type of person and what the motives really were. Can you speak to these dangers for young girls? And this is from Audrey in Nevada, and I'd actually like both of you to speak to it. So please share.
Well, first of all, that just gave me absolute chills. And, you know, it's a dangerous place. I don't really know how you totally trust any of it, to tell you the truth. What I discovered on my daughter's cell phone, she was 12 years old. And one of the things I would say through the entire process for me that was so important was my intuition and trusting that gut feeling. And if mm-hmm. you feel something's off with that child or not quite right, just like that mom happened to hear and then decided to go along, that was the difference maker right there. So when I had found this stuff on my daughter's phone at age 12, I felt like, and I didn't have any proof, I felt like I had to act as if her life depended on it. Later on, what I would find out was that, yeah, her life did depend on it.
Right.
because what I didn't know at that time was this started, she was 10 years old when this started. This had been going on for 2 years and I didn't even know it. But the moment I did find it out, I felt like, you know, I just had to act immediately as if she could potentially be swept away in the sex trade. Now, one other thing I found out later on was that she had a failed attempt to meet somebody. So we were very close. I just didn't know it. This is 2 years into therapy. It's just something that happened to come out. Was the only reason she didn't meet that individual was she didn't have the correct address of where she was at the time. Yeah. And she was 12. I mean, and naive. And there's a part in the book that I talk about where she thought that she, you know, would just control what she was willing to do or not do if she'd met somebody, not mm-hmm. understanding. I mean, these are kids.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I was thinking my students are adults, 18 to whatever, but they're neurodivergent. Most of them are very emotionally and developmentally delayed. They're smart, but they're emotionally still very young. And we get predators that are trying to get their money all the time. And with all the rules in the world, we've never found a rule set that was foolproof, perfect. The one thing we can do proactively right. that we do is we build a relationship where we want them to come to us and include us in everything. And I think that is something we can do proactively as parents is build a relationship so that no matter what the rules say, some predator is going to find a way around them and connect to their needs, their emotions, their drive. But if they have a relationship with us, they're much more likely to come and say, hey, Jason, I'm in trouble. I think they're scamming me. I think this feels off. That saves a lot of our students if we don't catch it before that.
Yeah. And I think the bottom line to this is communication. So it's having the people you can trust, having the friends that you can trust, trusting your parents, trusting, you know, those that you're working with. And I'm going to tell a story that really kind of hammers this point home. But last week, I got a call. And again, for those that are listening to the show that don't know that I'm also an international detective, I got a call in regards to a underage girl that had called a friend of hers and said, I need help. And then she explained the story that she had met somebody over the internet and that this guy was Mr. Wonderful. And so she traveled across many states to get to this guy. And she was calling her friend saying that she is being held along with some other girl. She's being held in a hotel room and that she believes that she can overhear them talking about selling her to two men. As soon as I received the call, I got a hold of the human trafficking task force in that state, advised to them who I was so that they would work quickly, of which they did. The friend that she had called then gave us the phone number, and which was essential in helping to locate where she was. And the task force sent two undercover people that rescued her within hours. So the fact that this girl, although she made a bad decision, she had someone she trusted, she called them, and she recognized that this was not what she bargained for.
Right. I think when I was a parent, if I'm lecturing my kids so much about all the things they should be doing, and I'm up here and they're down here and I'm talking down to them a lot, when they do make a mistake, I'm always worried that they won't call me because they are afraid I'm going to lecture them and say, yep, I told you so, you screwed up, instead of being there and collaborating with them and partnering with them, but also having a different responsibility as an adult than just to give them what they want so that they know, hey, I screwed up, I need help. And you're like, oh, I love you so much for asking. Thank you so much for trusting me. And that's kind of on me as a parent to set up that relationship so that they're willing. But sometimes you got to do what they don't want. I know in your book, you talk about sending your daughter away and how much she didn't want you to intervene on her behalf. Maybe you could talk about that because I think a lot of parents struggle with tough love and what that means. Maybe, you know, tell me a little bit, tell us a little bit about that balance.
Well, I think that first and foremost, parents need to be willing to be parents. Mm-hmm. And that involves paying attention to what your children are doing. That involves creating those conversations early in the relationship, you know, treating your kids like they're people early on and having conversations with them. So you do start to develop that trust. And then doing the job of being the parent, which means not being popular, not going along with everybody else. The pressure is tremendous. Mm-hmm. As far as these parents are concerned, and we're also caught up in our own worlds and so on and so forth. So the tough love part, you know, is essential. I feel like it's very, first of all, people don't want to do tough love. It's too hard.
Right.
And I also think that it's very counterintuitive to what we want to do as parents. We want to keep our kids from pain. We want to save them from bad decisions. We want to make their life fun. We want to enjoy them. And if you're doing the tough love and making the tough decisions, it's not fun most of the time, or can be that way. So to me, there, you know, when I went through this thing with her, and I'm not really a hard ass. I mean, I'm strict. But I want to talk to you. I want to talk through it. I don't want to, you know, I'm not the prison guard. I don't want to be that person. But this particular child, my third one, they're all different. You know, confident, sassy, knows her own mind, willful, you know, just one of those kids, right? So as this stuff was happening, I really had to realize that I didn't have any choice but to make these decisions. And one of them was, when I got right down to it, when I found this stuff, was they were critical life-altering decisions that basically laid the world on my shoulders. And the pain of those decisions and getting them right would almost make anybody want to run the opposite direction and not make a decision.
Right.
So that right there was hard. The next part of that tough love is being willing to accept all of the possible outcomes. And I knew, you know, that might be, this may forever wound my relationship with my daughter. I mean, you know, she might not forgive me. It may not turn out well. I might not get the result I was hoping for. I just didn't know, but you have to, that's part of the tough love, is you have to be willing to accept that. And then finally, the other part for me was being tested over and over again, questioning myself, questioning the decisions, having other people question me, having her question me once we start the process, and the staying power to stick with it. And it is very, very tough when your kid is away at a therapeutic boarding school and you have to take that call once a week, and she's begging and crying and telling you everybody's crazy, and you know, you got to get her out of there. And anyway, it's really hard.
I think go ahead, Alan.
Oh no. Well, yeah. What I say is, first of all, I'm glad that we're talking about, you know, the job of a parent. There have been too many times in which, in working with a family, and they're working with professionals that have helped them to come to the decision that you've made, and they then don't stand their ground. And I've had numerous parents say, "Well, but what if they don't like me after this? Or they said they're going to hate me? Or you know, how are we still going to be friends?" And I have said numerous times, you know, your child doesn't need a 45-year-old best friend. Your child needs a parent, and parenting is not always easy. So I love the fact that we're talking about it. Deborah, I love the fact that the way that you explained it, I think for so many parents out there that are struggling with some of these things, to hear that and to know that you are going to have to push through this, I think is fabulous. I mean, I think that so many parents out there think that they're alone. They think that they're the only one going through this. And I think to know that it is tough, but that you can make it and you can come out the other side with a happy ending.
Yeah. I just want to say so many parents hear that tough love is important and then they assume that tough love means cold and mean and rejecting, almost like in your situation, Deborah, tough love would have been, look, you made your bed. Now you're going to have to lie in it and figure this out on your own at age 12. What does that mean? Yeah. So for me, tough love means doing what they need, not what they want necessarily, because in the end, what they need is what they will want. And that's why parents will always get their children back if they did what they actually needed, not what they wanted. And that's hard to do. I like saying yes to my kids, and I try to say yes whenever I can so that when I do say no, they're like, oh, that must be important. So tough love is really important, and you can keep a relationship.
I would actually love to change that term from tough to strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's really strong love. It takes tremendous guts and courage and staying power. And to me, it's really the ultimate love. Your willingness to do that and to accept whatever comes with it as a result, that including the relationship you have with your child. In other words, that is the greatest love of all. The willingness to give that up if you have to in order to save your child.
All right. My co-host is Jason Griglaw. We are speaking with Deborah Berry, and we are talking about The Tech Trap, a mother's fight to save her daughter. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to or watching Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we are back. We're talking about The Tech Trap. When we went to break, one of the things that I think I had mentioned was the fact of a happy ending. And I think we've been talking about this now for about a half an hour. And one of the things we haven't gotten into is, how's your daughter doing now? So share with that, because I think for people listening, I think if I was out there, I'd be going, okay, but tell me she's doing well. So share with us what's going on now with your daughter.
She, first of all, she came home February of 2020, which was during the pandemic, which, as it turns out, worked greatly in our favor because we were locked down, right? So she couldn't, it wasn't on me. She couldn't go out and just do whatever she felt like doing. Nobody could. But right. Anyway, so she came back and she's now a senior in high school. And last May, she wanted to start some flying lessons. And I agreed to let her start flying, which since last May, she has now soloed and cross-country soloed.
Wow.
And she has been accepted into Embry-Riddle. And she will start in June as a private pilot on her instrument rating. So,
wow.
Yeah, so all of that independence all of that rebel, all of that need for freedom, fortunately, got funneled into a very specific area. Mm-hmm. Gave her very focused interest. So that has worked out very well for us. And anyway, so it's all good. I think that part of the reason why that has worked out so well, frankly, was that for 4 years she was tech free. And being tech free mm-hmm. meant that her memory, and I really believe that her frontal cortex developed differently. And I think that that has made a difference, the way she communicates, the way she functions, the way she interfaces. Her confidence, having to face this head on and handle things. When you're in therapeutic boarding school, you got to keep in mind that you have, you know, kids are troubled. They have their problems. And so it's mm-hmm. definitely not a smooth ride. And when things come up, it's a environment in which you're basically, you don't get a choice but to face whatever's going on and get it worked out. Which I think for a lot of our kids today, there's a great disadvantage to hiding behind these cell phones and in social media instead of face to face.
So, Jason, share with us a little bit about, from a therapeutic standpoint, the concept of funneling energy that has been focused in a negative way and funneling it into something more positive, as a therapeutic protocol.
Well, for the biggest problem with technology is that it's like food, and if you have a food addiction, you can't just be sober from it forever, but you can get help, but you can't expect someone to stay off computers and phones the rest of their life. So how do you protect them long enough so their brain can develop and mature till they're safe to be able to say no? And so I know that our approach is here is not a sobriety approach, although temporarily we do sometimes have students get off their technology to get a break. I think they have to develop and learn and mature, and it's expensive in terms of resources emotionally and time-wise, and it takes time. And man, I'm so proud of parents, you know, like Deborah, that take the time to do what they need, even though it was hard. And I don't know if you're aware much, Deborah, but there's such a pushback right now against the therapeutic world, as if everybody out there trying to help kids in these therapeutic programs are evil and the kids' rights are being taken away. But I stay in touch with all of the girls that I was a therapist for when I was a director at a place. And they all said the same thing, Jason, we're all alive because we went to treatment. And I guess maybe you could share a little bit about that with some of the other parents, that if they're looking to make a difference and to actually get ahead of the problem and not just put a Band-Aid on it, how do you make the decision? When do you know they need to get away and get into a program versus work with them at home and see a therapist at home? How do you make that decision?
Those are really tough decisions. I am aware of that pushback. I'll go back to the first thing we did for our daughter, which was to put her into the wilderness program. For us in that moment, it was a choice between losing her to the sex trade or putting her into an environment that could potentially save her. I didn't see that I had too many options. So that's why we made that first move. Yes, the therapeutic environment is not an easy environment. And like I just said, you know, they're full of, you know, these kids have problems that they're busy working out. But that's where the tough love comes in. You either trust that process or you don't trust that process. And I can promise you that if we had not taken these steps with my daughter, we would not have her today. We might have her at home physically, but I would not have the kid that I have. And situation where she realizes what loss of freedom means, because it is a loss of freedom. People, there's tremendous structure. People are, you know, telling you what to do and how to do it and when to do it. And right then and there, you make a decision that either you want a life like that or you don't. So it's hard on the parents. And one of the hardest things is, you know, they're going through therapy session, and even though I'm paying the bills, I don't have a right to the information of what's going on in those therapy sessions. So it's very tough to get a gauge on where she's at and where she's coming along and all those sorts of things. Again, the parent needs to do everything that they can do. They need to participate in the process as much, they're to become part of the solution, not the problem. Trust the professionals. However, pay attention. Trust your intuition. Ask the questions. Get involved. And all those things will help you move through this process. None of it is a perfect, you know, situation. Nothing is. But, you know, and I also think that getting in front of these things works out much better.
Agreed. Mm-hmm. We're going to run out of time. I really want to hear about what you learned in your research that most parents wouldn't even have any idea because they haven't been sucked into it. What do you want to share with people that they might be willing to say, hey, I'm going to have to go get this book now and read the rest because it was
there's so much, right? I learned so much in that research, but the one thing that really jumped out at me that I had no idea about was called persuasive technology. So I want to make sure I get it exact, but it's a discipline in which digital machines and apps are configured to alter human thoughts and behaviors with the end goal of purposely addicting the user. So when I came across that term, I had no idea what that meant. I thought persuasive meant to be persuaded, and it's not. It is purposely configured to addict your children into these apps. And I think even as adults, we feel it ourselves with our cell phones. And when that little ding happens, you want to go check it, right? Because it's a conditioning. But that shocked me that they unapologetically create these apps and social media platforms. The name of the game is to keep your kid on that stuff or anybody on that stuff as long as possible because it equals dollars. Then the next level of shock for me was really when you look at the tech giants and you start to look at their families and what they choose to do. There's a whole section about this in the book. Mm-hmm. They run the other way. They do not allow it. They put their kids in high schools or in schools without technology and don't allow them to have that until they're in high school because of the development of the brain. They know.
Yep. Drug dealers don't use their own drug, do they?
No.
Yes, exactly. In fact, along those lines, for those people that haven't seen it, watch I believe it's on Netflix, The Social Dilemma.
Yes.
It's very, very eye-opening on this subject that we're talking about in regards to this type of persuasion. So much so that some of the people that are speaking on that show were very, very high up. And when they went to the powers to be within those companies and said that this is wrong, they were let go. So that's the way in which they're approaching this.
Video game companies have it down to a science to make that extra buck, and they're so good at it. And in reality, most of my students come and their parents say, hey, my child is addicted to gaming. What we find is maybe 5% are actually addicted. The other 95% just didn't have anything better, and we needed to give them other outlets. That was for, you know, my students, but the word addiction gets thrown around a lot. I do think obsessive and compulsive is pretty accurate most of the time.
Well, to me, we're not going to stuff the tech genie back into the bottle. I wish I could some days. And other days, there's certain things I enjoy, like, you know, maps, things like that. But it's really going to be up to us as parents to become aware and to educate our kids and then in turn make decisions about how we're willing to allow this into our lives. And to get back to some of the basics. And again, I can't be a parent. Don't allow it at the dinner table. don't be, you know, it's so easy, especially with little kids, you know, keeping them, if you're out to dinner and keeping them occupied, watching a movie, you start that process right then and there. And it's not necessary. They need to be interacting with the family. We're paying a high price. We're paying a very high price.
Well, we have a comment that's coming in that I think addresses exactly what we're talking about. This one reads, it is very disheartening to see some of these teens be safe. I believe that they're monitoring what is going on in their lives because of cell phones. The teens' faces are buried in the phone all day, and their consciousness seems to be absorbed by this technology. I want to applaud you and your courage to write this book and to start workshops for parents. I purchased your book, and we'll be sharing a link to your site to everyone. Something has to be done, and this is one way to get it done. Thank you. And this is from Joan in New York.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. But I think Joan is right on target. As I mentioned in the beginning that, Jason and Debbie have, they have their podcast, that parents can listen to. We have this one. There are a lot of positive things that we can do, and we're using technology to do it. But we have to look at it and say that right now there is so much more negativity and divisiveness being out there that for all of you that are listening and that you're passing it on to other people, as they talk about in The Social Dilemma, they want your eyes and they want your ears. That's what they're going for. If you continue to give them to them, then we're going to keep going down this path. There are positive outlooks. There are ways, and it isn't just this show. There's lots of great ones out there, and there are books like Deborah is writing. So there's ways for us to communicate, and as she said, we can't put it back in the bottle, but we can get the help that we need. We can talk to people that are focusing on the positive and make a difference, but we all have to do it together.
That's great. Two thoughts that I had. First, one of the research that's pretty cool about gaming is that gaming addiction only occurs if people are gaming alone. It's like alcohol or drinking, right? If you're drinking with friends, mm-hmm. you can do it really well. And in gaming, all of the negative side effects seem to be mitigated if they're gaming with friends and turning it into a social thing where there's no secrecy, isolating, or just you in a dark room alone, right? That's different. And so technology in and of itself has never been the problem, but it can be, depending on how it's used. It comes back to relationships and not isolating and having relationships of influence with our kids and a relationship where they want to talk to us. And that saves so many kids and a lot of pain and suffering.
So Deborah, if you're speaking directly to a parent out there that they find their child in a crisis right now, what do you believe is the most important thing that they can start doing immediately?
First and foremost, do not ignore what you see and what you find. Do not justify it. Do not say, everybody's doing it. It's no big deal. It's a passing phase. I can't emphasize that enough. Trust your intuition. You may not have absolute proof, but as a parent, if that gut is churning, it's only a matter of time before you see it. So I just, and everybody's situation is going to be a little different. When I found this stuff, I was horrified. It's really, really horrified. I didn't really know what to do, to be honest with you. So the first thing I did was I gathered up all the tech, all of it, changed the number, shut it down, just shut it down until I could get my head around what to do. Doing a little bit of research, trying to figure it out. I ultimately had an educational consultant. It's a rabbit hole, to get on the internet and try to figure this stuff out. It's also embarrassing and shameful. And, most people, it's not a subject that you're going to, go to lunch and discuss with your friends. Your daughter's been looking at pornography and, mm-hmm. you know, you've got videos and pictures and adult dating sites and all kinds. It's just not something most people want to deal with. And in fact, most other people will run the opposite direction from you in this process. So anyway, so don't ignore it.
I couldn't agree more.
It's your child. It's, you know, it's your commitment. See it through. It's hard. Be strong.
And so, and Jason, we just have a couple of minutes. What is your input? If we have somebody who is watching or listening right now, what do you think the next step is for them? They're dealing with a child and they believe that they have this issue.
Yeah, that, like Deborah said, the biggest issue would be inaction. I don't think there's a wrong action to take if you are doing something to get involved. You're not going to do it perfect. Forgive yourself for not, but doing something to get between them and whatever the danger is. That's what any, you know, mama bear or papa bear would do. And then start educating yourself like Deborah did. And care enough to not turn your head and bury your head in the sand. Be brave enough, you know, strong love, like you said, is awesome. I think there are specialists out there that know what to do so you don't have to do it alone. My wife and I started our podcast for neurodivergent young adults because there was no information when we were going through it. And we tried to find it and there just wasn't any. So we want to give back just like Deborah does. And I think that's at the heart of every parent is I want good information and there wasn't any, let me share. I think there are good friends that you can turn to and say, hey, this is hard. Can I just talk to you without feeling judged or like you want to fix it or have a support system? And I think we didn't talk about it, but saving your marriage, if you are married through this, is really important. A child going through crises puts a marriage to the test. And I think my wife and I fought more because of our child in crises than anything else, because we care so much and we love them so much that we want to do the right thing. And we may not agree on what the exact right process is. So don't give up. There is light at the end of the tunnel. I always, 99 times out of 100, there's a happy ending, but not until the ending. You've got to go through the process.
Right. Deborah, again, thank you so much for coming on. What is the best way if anybody wants to get in touch with you? I assume the book Tech Trap can be bought anywhere.
Yes.
I know it's a wide release. So
I have a website called the Tech Trap Movement. So you can get in touch with me through that. I don't have a lot of social media, surprise. But I've got a LinkedIn and I'm trying to work up to some sort of a professional Facebook page. So I, you know, I'm very uncomfortable with the social media, as you might imagine. But anyway, the Tech Trap Movement, you can find me .com. You can find me there.
It looked like you were working on a workshop. Are you ready to launch that yet?
Not quite yet. The workshop will be educating and about all these different, if you read the book, the research part, how online predators work, how the different platforms work, so on and so forth. So I am currently developing that actually with my sister, who is develops intellectual materials like that. And so we'll be presenting that as soon as we get it all together. And then I'm speaking. And, you know, anybody that wants to hear me, I'm talking. So.
All right. If for anybody out there, if you were driving and you couldn't write that down, we at answers.net, we will have all the information on how to reach Deborah. Jason, what is the best way if anybody needs to reach you?
You can find us at techieforlife.com, H-I-E-R-F-E, to us at jasondebbie.com.
All right. For both of you, thank you so much for coming on. I think this is a huge subject. As soon as we get off, I'm going to jump on there and join the movement too. So for everybody out there, join the movement, okay? Again, thank you both so much.
Thank you, Alan. Thanks, Jason.
All right.
You too, Deborah.
All right. For everybody out there, be sure to join us next Monday when we'll be joined by the author, Larry Haas, to discuss his insightful new book, The Kennedys in the World, How Jack, Bobby, and Ted Remade America's Empire. And please visit our archives of past interviews at whatever platform you listen to. And if there's one out there that doesn't have us, tell them that you want us. For everybody, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Hello, I'm Marty Gove. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain, and fast. Honestly, you may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain, no mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.